BioShock, Part 3. I saw it coming. Could have heard it coming if it wasn't for my heart hammering in my chest and my ears. I had it planned, and I didn't see how it could go wrong. Probably the only reason why I went ahead with it in the first place. I took a deep breath, then a second, and then a third. I had decided to stop before I began to hyperventilate. I need to do this before I talk myself out of it. I fired the first shot right at its head. I saw the lights of its eyes turn red. Everything from that point on just happened. I waited for it to reach the tanks and then fired a bolt of lightning at it to stop it in its tracks. Except it didn't stop. It just slowed down. By the time I got the shotgun out, it was already past the tanks. I froze. A part of my brain started shrieking at me, "Run, you idiot!" But I couldn't move. I was about to be squashed like an insect.
Move!
A female voice came from my radio, and it unfroze my muscles. I jumped to the side, the Big Daddy charging past me. The monster may have had the strength of a freight train, but he turned just about as quickly. As he slammed into the wall behind me, I scrambled to my feet. The only other way to go was back down the corridor past the tanks at the other end, and that hallway suddenly looked a lot darker. I heard a crunching sound. The Big Daddy had just pulled himself loose. I ran down the corridor and came out the other end, the roar of the Big Daddy following me. I managed to turn the corner without skidding on the floor, and then barreled past the little sister, turned, and bang. The explosion pushed me off my feet, and I landed on my rear. The shotgun had flown out of my hands. Apart from my plasmid, I was defenseless, and I knew it. I closed my eyes for a few seconds. I waited for what would happen next, listening in mortal terror. No sounds. And then, crying. I opened my eyes to see the little girl kneeling next to the Big Daddy. She was bawling her eyes out. To her, that thing wasn't some monster. It was Mr. Bubbles. I walked over to her, ignoring her fear. I had to. It wasn't real. Just something cooked up in a lab somewhere. Conditioning, they called it. What I call it shouldn't be repeated in polite company. When I picked her up, I felt her struggling right up to the point to where I touched her skin. Her whole body seemed to glow. I set her down and watched her puke up the slug. When her eyes looked up at me, they were blue. Blue eyes, golden hair, and she smiled at me. By the time I came to my senses and picked up my shotgun, she was gone. Probably through one of those vents. I collected the atom from the slug, that sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach making itself known again. I kept thinking of seeing junkies, remembering how the splicers acted. There was a feeling, faint, but still there. Felt like some monster slowly gnawing away at my guts. I just couldn't get it out of my head. Then, a blessed distraction. Even if it was from Atlas.
You're done on your mission of mercy, then? My family and I need your help, you know.
I'm heading there now, Atlas. I've got Steinman's key.
I know.
There was a pause, just the right amount of time before saying,
Sorry about the cross words, boyo, but you can see how badly I want to get out of here, and I've got a family to think of.
Yeah, I thought, so you keep telling me. Out loud, I said, I'll contact you again once I reach this Neptune's bounty. I headed back to the emergency access door, thinking about what he said. Everything he said. You see, although I'm an engineer by trade, I do have hobbies after all. And one of those hobbies was mystery stories. Agatha Christie, Dashiell Hammett, Arthur Conan Doyle. I went through their books again and again, getting past the literary tricks to find the clues within, and right now, I needed something that would give me an inside track on Atlas.
Hello?
It was the same voice telling me to move during the fight with the Big Daddy, so I guessed I owed her the time of day at least. Who are you?
I can't say. Too many people listening, but I need your help.
I laughed. Well, this is definitely the month for party lines and requests.
I overheard what you promised Tenenbaum. That you'd help the little sisters if you could. And considering you nearly blew up half the medical pavilion to save one, I don't have to ask if you're committed to this.
You got me. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool sucker.
No, you're not. One of those little sisters used to be a girl named Sally. I need your help to find her.
Why don't you talk to Tenenbaum? She seems to be an authority.
She prefers her privacy. Yet she talked to you. What's your name?
Mark. Mark Jacobs. If you can't tell me what your real name is, well, what should I call you?
Songbird. That name will do as well as any.
I'm starting to think I'm the only one in this burg going by their real name. So you want my help finding this sister? Well, I need help staying alive. I held up a hand, feeling the energy course through it. And it didn't feel as strong as before. And my battery seemed to be running low.
Have you found any Eve hypos?
Yeah.
Better use.
I know. Or else the power company cuts off all service to my hands. I took a deep breath, stuck my arm, and hoped I was putting it in the right spot. I'd had some medical training before I changed majors, but none of my pre-med courses ever covered this. Listen, do me a favor.
I'm afraid there is not much I can...
Just talk to me, okay? In case you haven't been keeping up on recent events, I am all alone down here. I waited, feeling the warmth of the Eve coursing through my body, hating every second of it. And it would be nice to talk to someone about something else besides what I'm doing right now. Silence. Great. I spooked her.
All right. What do you want to talk about?
Her voice was softer, and I really found myself warming to that voice. I don't know. Tell me about you. What do you look like?
Dark brown hair, blue eyes, short, I suppose you could call me petite.
Well, I'm tall, hair's...
I know, I can see you.
I turned my head to look up one of the security cameras. It wasn't moving back and forth anymore. It was staring straight at me. You can see me?
You made it easy. You hacked the camera at your end. Made it vulnerable, so I could get the feed at my end.
I suddenly felt extremely self-conscious. Better not stare too long at me, you might go blind.
Despite what you may think, Mr. Jacobs, under the grime and blood you're actually easier on the eyes than you might think. You remind me a little of my father, actually.
Just the kind of thing a guy likes to hear.
No, it's not what you think. My father was many things to many people, but my father was my only real friend. He was fierce, but he was kind. Compassionate.
You should get out more. I pulled myself to my feet. The power in my hands returned to its original strength.
I would have loved to, but I was trapped for a long time. I'm still trapped. Trapped by my sins and my obligations and my particular circumstances.
I got to emergency access, shutting down the alert and unlocking the door to the tunnel leading to Neptune's Bounty. As I walked, I asked, if you could be anywhere else on Earth, where would you want to be the most?
That's easy. Paris, France. I've wanted to go there all my life.
I could tell she was smiling a bit from her voice. Okay, Songbird, I'll make you a deal. You play straight with me, and I swear to God, I will get you to Paris.
You're not the first to make that promise, you know. Something always got in the way.
Songbird, help me get through this, and I will get you to Paris if I have to put you on my back and swim there.
I appreciate what you're saying. I just hope you're able to make it happen.
Well, let's get started. First, I need you to get some information for me.
Simple enough. I have access to the Thinker and can pull up any information I need.
What's the Thinker, actually? Fontaine told me some about it, but I wanted to hear it from a source I could trust.
A machine that makes, stores, and processes information. It keeps structure going, manages mechanical and electronic processes.
That's gotta be handy. Okay, I said as I found myself getting closer to Neptune's bounty. I need you to find certain pieces of info for me. Is there any way to send you information other than by radio? Some of the stuff I need is going to be pretty complicated.
Like?
A map of Rapture, blueprints, technical schematics.
There's a pneumo off to your right as you enter Neptune's bounty. I'll send you a map for starters.
See if you can send a pencil or two and some paper.
Will do.
Thanks, Songbird, for everything.
Aw, that's real sweet. You made yourself a new friend.
Atlas said, completely throwing me off balance. Almost literally. Damn it, Atlas!
No, it's really romantic, sort of.
Atlas, would it be fair to say that I'm up the creek without a paddle? Factoring that in, wouldn't it be safe to say that I could use all the help I can get?
I just wanted to warn you in advance. Most of everyone around here are damaged goods.
No. Really? Apart from all the sane and sensible people I've met so far?
If that girl who I think she is, she's more damaged goods than even the other citizens of Rapture you'll find wandering about. Just saying, she's had a few of her marbles shaken loose. Be careful. What she could tell you might not be all that reliable.
I'll take that under advisement. I'm in Neptune's bounty now. I closed the pressure door behind me and looked around. So far, so... Oh. Okay. Set of stairs, damaged entrance, Big Daddy with his headlights off, and a crucified body on the wall ahead of me. This was not a good sign. I moved closer to see that there were suitcases full of Bibles stacked under him and a single word written in red over the body. Smuggler. Yeah, that was an even worse sign. As I looked around for the pneumo thing, I asked, is this Ryan's work?
He's the one who built this place, and he's the one who ran it into the ground. Nobody knows exactly what happened. Maybe he went mad. Maybe the power got to him. Maybe he decided he just didn't like people. However way you slice it, good men died. What you're seeing is just part of it. He was determined to keep this place a secret, and he thought smugglers would get sloppy. Lead the people Ryan was afraid of down to Rapture.
I heard a thunk nearby, found the pneumo under some debris. I opened up the canister and smiled, then sat down and started writing a message to Songbird. The list was short. Number one, figure this place as torpedo launchers for defense and to prevent people from escaping. What's the scanning frequency for them? Number two, is there a frequency I can use to contact you without anyone listening in? Number three, can Atlas be trusted? And number four, what can you tell me that'll make it easier for me to trust you? I sent back the message and stuck the paper and pencils into a pocket, hoping I'd come across a backpack of some kind soon. Then I checked out the map. All right, Atlas, Songbird came through. I've got a map of Neptune's bounty I can use in case of emergencies. I neglected to tell him the map was the city of Rapture, since I didn't want him getting even the notion that I really wanted to stay here.
Are the fisheries too?
Yeah, basic stuff, which it wasn't. But if push comes to shove and we get cut off, I won't get stuck for a way out. I hope. After a quick stop to spend my very hard-earned money on some supplies, I continued on towards the fisheries. And quickly wished I hadn't. I stopped as I saw a shadow ahead of me of a woman crouching over something, then jumping straight up, not just a few feet into the air, or more than a few feet, straight up and probably high enough to reach the ceiling, about 10 feet over my scalp. Then a scratchy voice, something right out of the Wicked Witch's mouth. what crawls in my garden. My skin did that annoying flesh-crawling bit, and I hauled up the flamethrower. I moved forward and... nothing. No one around. I was actually starting to relax just a little when I saw something falling around me. Rose petals. I looked up fast, but didn't see anyone. I did see a large hole in the roof, and I heard that voice again. But the days go by like wind. Oh yeah, just groovy. They can jump now. I pushed forward, finding another health station, and converted it. It was getting easier now that I was working with the tech hands-on. Plus, it'll keep them from recovering if they get hurt while getting hostile. And I was sure they would. The next door I came through opened up into a larger area, a dock of some kind. Unfortunately, behind door number one was a serious problem. I almost ran right into a Big Daddy on the rounds. I backed up fast, but it looked like he really didn't notice me. Good thing, too. This one wasn't outfitted with a drill. It was carrying some sort of gun that used rivets for bullets. It's my luck, this guy is probably going to be a harder nut to crack. From my new hiding place, I surveyed my options. Two machine gun turrets at opposite ends of the docks. Metal barrels that, from the smell, weight, and the way they sloshed, were probably filled with high-octane fuel. Probably diesel. Some other splicers that were probably sent to find and kill me, since they were keeping their distance from the Big Daddy, but weren't leaving the area. Okay. This was going to require a little preparation. Took me several minutes, but it was worth it. Hacked the turrets to make them friendly, piled up the barrels to make a nice little kill zone. All I needed to do was stay out of the way of that rivet gun and I'd be fine. Figured I'd rile up the splicers, use the Big Daddy as a shield, and let him take care of the riffraff. Almost died. I expected the Big Daddy to attack, but what I didn't expect was that he had another toy at his disposal. He threw these green glowing objects that stuck to where they were thrown. One of them got close to me, and that's when I found out, the hardest way possible, that they were some sort of proximity mine. Blew me off my feet, rung my bell something fierce. If the Big Daddy hadn't been too busy dealing with the turrets, he probably would have finished me off, all the while the little sister telling the thing to kill me. By the time he started heading up the ramp to my diesel trap, both of the turrets were down. All the splicers had been killed, and I was feeling like 5 miles of bad road. I managed to squeeze off a shot, resulting in an explosion that shut off the ringing in my ears. And every other sound. I must have passed out for a few seconds. When I woke up, the little sister was crying just like the other two. I couldn't wait to cure her of that parasite in her stomach, and she fought me right up until I held my hand on her forehead. As my vision cleared from the flash, I heard my radio activate again. I couldn't decide what emotion was stronger, exasperation that it might be Atlas, telling me to hurry up, or anticipation that it was Songbird again.
I have seen what you have done.
Tenenbaum. Well, at least it wasn't Atlas.
You have shown kindness to my little ones. Are you truly a friend to us?
Well, I'm not your enemy.
Regardless, a little one brings you a gift to demonstrate our appreciation. There is a gatherer's garden in the chamber nearby, but you must hurry, lest someone else benefit from your kindness. Also, be warned, more splicers are alerted to your presence by what you have done. Your presence has not gone unnoticed.
Thanks for the heads up, lady. I pushed forward after looking around. Still no backpacks. My pockets were starting to get full and making noise when I walked. I would soon have to face choices on what I could carry and what I could afford to get by without. Wait. Longshoremen. Most of them use duffel bags to carry their equipment. If I could find some kind of locker room... Hell, while I was at it, why not wish for a bulletproof vest? Well, one thing one could say about Tenenbaum, she didn't exaggerate. I'd found the Gatherer's Garden vending machine and a teddy bear. As soon as I picked it up, I realized the teddy bear was too heavy to be stuffed with just cotton. And I've also found that there was a turret close by, able to shoot rockets at me. And, oh yeah, I met Miss Rose Petals. Getting the atom was easy. The rocket turret, well, that just needed a little current thrown its way, and all I had to do was rewire it before the locals came to investigate. I barely got it done in time before a group of three splicers came up from the stairs and the platform behind them. That turret started throwing bones at them faster than you could say this old man, and made my life a lot easier and more likely to continue. I was actually starting to feel like I had a better than awful chance of surviving this madhouse. Then I got to the fisheries. The room outside looked like a cross between a waiting room and a slaughterhouse. There were bloodstains almost everywhere, bailing and gaffing hooks stuck in the walls and floor. I made it to the door and banged on it. Wilkins, you in there? The small eye slit on the door opened, revealing a man wearing a welder's helmet. Atlas radioed ahead, says you were looking for an invite to the fisheries. Yeah, could you open up real quick? Well, nuts, I say. Hey, do you have any idea what my last 24 hours has been like? No, and I don't care. What do you care about? If you heads up to the Wharfmaster's office and find old Peach a research camera, maybe I can manage an invite. He stopped as we both heard it. A woman singing. I spun around to see rose petals falling from a hole in the ceiling. What was that? Know anybody else around here that tosses flower petals around? There was a wry chuckle from behind the welder's helmet Peachy was wearing. My friend, you are fucked. He slid the eye slit cover shut, and I was finding it hard to disagree. What came next was nothing less than a fight that made the Big Daddy fight I first had in Rapture seem like a pillow fight. First off, I practically poured ammo at her, and she barely even noticed physical damage that would have put down a regular splicer. I was throwing electricity at her to slow her down. But even with what I had, if I took even a moment to switch weapons, it would open me up like a zipper on a jacket. And I was running out of ammo fast. Just when I thought it might be a good idea to get the door behind me open so I could run for it, Peach decided to lend a hand. A helicopter bot with machine guns entered the room, and it was chewing up the spiders somewhat fierce. The splicer shrieked and made a run for it. I collapsed, breaking out the medical kits and literally bathing in them. When it was all over, I was healing, but bloody. That one's too tough for you. Look on the conveyor belt on the side of the door. You'll find something to keep you alive. Now, go get that camera and take snapshots of those that crawls on the ceiling. And then I'll let you into the fisheries. As I walked over to the conveyor belt, Wilkins added, Just remember, sonny friend, I smell an ounce of Fontaine on you, and I'll have you in a box. Atlas gives you the vouch, but I ain't turning my eye on his say-so.
You're all heart, Wilkins. A few items came out on the conveyor belt, a medical kit and something that looked like a cannon put together with spare parts from cans. What the heck is this thing?
You never seen a grenade launcher before, smart guy?
Guns that shoot things that go booms aren't exactly common where I come from.
Grenade launcher, huh?
As I considered where to put the thing, an idea formed.
Say, Peachy, there is something else you can do for me that'll help me get what you need.
I couldn't help but smile as I left the door to the fisheries behind. A new goal, a new weapon, and best of all, a brand new backpack and a utility belt. Now I didn't have to fish for things or fumble through overcrowded pockets for what I needed. I backtracked to the pneumo I'd found when I first entered, and sure enough, there was something waiting for me. I opened up the container inside, finding the note I'd written earlier with some written addendums. Number one, figure this place as a torpedo launchers for defense and to prevent people from escaping. What's the scanning frequency for them? Answer, 481.23 megahertz. Number two, is there a frequency I can use to contact you without anyone listening in? Answer, 293.79 megahertz. Number three, can Atlas be trusted? A rather emphatic no, written in big letters. That part actually wasn't a grand revelation, but it was nice to have it confirmed. Well, number four, what can you tell me that'll make it easier for me to trust you? Answer, I wish I knew. I smiled more at that. At least she was being honest. I scribbled a quick thanks on the note and sent it back, then checked the radio's frequency ranges as well as the wattage output. At maximum output, the signal would only last for an hour before the batteries were drained, but it would be long enough. All right, better prepared, better informed, better armed. Time to go find a camera. Finding the Wharfmaster's office was easy enough. There were signs aplenty, not to mention stairs, security cameras, and crazed idiots trying to rip my face off. Those are either avoided where I could, or fought those I couldn't. I found other audio diaries, giving me a better picture of what things were like before the war. Warnings, memories, musings, doubts. Plenty of information about how dangerous, clever Frank Fontaine was. Information about the infamous slugs that were the cause of this whole mess, and how Adam really worked. I listened as Tenenbaum herself spoke of Adam as a biological catastrophe, and then as an economic goldmine. Like just about every other addictive drug one can mention, just one more horrible things about this place. Add it to the list. I got to the office past a hallway of file cabinets to find a bulky camera sitting on the desk. All this advanced tech, but their cameras are twice the size of normal ones. And I took a closer look. The device didn't just provide photos. It was sort of a typewriter assembly in the back of the housing, plus a dial on it that had no place on a normal camera, with settings like combat, medical, chemical, psychological, mechanical, and metallurgic. It was currently set to combat. That's when I heard a voice singing, "Jesus loves me," and I turned around and saw one of those spider splicers staring right at me. I nearly wigged out and dropped the camera before I realized there was a reinforced window separating us with a lattice of metal within the glass. Plus, he wasn't looking at me. Okay. You can't hurt me in here. I'm fine. I remembered the camera. I raised it, focused on the splicer, then managed to take a picture, despite how badly my hands were shaking. The camera hummed and began feeding out a large photo of the splicer. It wasn't a bad photo, but as it was revealed, I noticed that there was printed words on the reverse side, detailing information about soft spots, what the splicer's physical abilities were, and that anti-personnel rounds would work extremely well against them. It was all I could do to not gape at the device in my hands. Who built this thing? This camera could give me a real leg up on dealing with the people trying to kill me, and I had to give it to someone who probably wouldn't shed a tear over my untimely demise, especially if he was the cause of it. Then I remembered the little sisters. That made the doubts go away. Fine. Get pictures of two more of the spider splicers, then bring them in the camera to Peach. Simple. Yeah, I didn't buy that either, and I am a master of bullshitting myself. Spider number two was relatively easy to get a picture of, since I had the camera up and ready to go as soon as I entered one of the nearby buildings. Nice picture. Offered me more advice on how to fight them. One problem, though. The camera came with a flash, and now I had his full attention. I backed up fast as he started throwing more of those gaffing hooks at me, protected by the door to that section, which had closed as I backed up. When it opened again, he and two other splicers were there, murderer on their misshapen faces. Those started to turn to expressions of shock as I fired my newest toy into their midst. The grenade launcher sure had a kick to it, but it was nothing compared to the kick in the faces they received. One shot, and they were permanently dissuaded from making more trouble for me. With that, I went to work, grabbing what I could to keep me from finding myself on the wrong side of the grass. Most of it was ammunition, a couple of first aid kits, which was nice, seeing as how I was starting to run desperately low on both. Also found more of those AudioVox devices. I couldn't carry them all with me, but I played each one, taking them to heart and holding on to the ones that provided useful information to be used later. The more I listened, though, the worse things seemed to get. Stories about Ryan's security guys, dealing with Fontaine's thugs, genuine fear and panic from the thought of being on Frank's bad side, and with good reason. The man was a monster, totally self-involved, willing to do anything to get ahead, and exploiting others at will. Rapture was the perfect place for a man like him. No morals to get in the way, no laws to enforce, and worst of all, a city full of people who'd been told that they were the best of humanity. The easiest mark is someone who thinks they can't be a mark. Plus, it didn't hurt that when Ryan placed his faith in the great chain of industry, he didn't quite account for the fact that crime itself is an industry. A twisted, warped one, but it followed the same sorts of rules. Ryan never knew what hit him. All right, time to stop resting. One more spider splicer to go. The third one was much easier to deal with. The photos and their evaluations of their subjects came in pretty handy, but some of their advice was a little hard to stomach. Literally. One of the handy and helpful tips included the use of spider splicer hearts as a means to apply first aid due to the regenerative nature of their blood. Thanks, but hell no thanks. I checked out some of the new equipment I'd picked up, as well as some of the upgraded versions that were reconfigured by the power to the people stations. Amazing technology, I thought, for the first time in 5 hours. The ability to make swift and permanent changes that would drastically alter a machine's functions. A mechanic in a box, a doctor in a tin, a soldier in a gadget, superpowers in bottles. And all you have to do is deal with all the insanity, death, and oppression. Operators are standing by to take your call. This place was really starting to affect my sense of humor.
Well, well, the wharf rat didn't get himself et. You got something for me and my crew, or are you looking to just get criticized?
I was too tired and too in need of Peach's help to answer. But he sure didn't mind continuing on.
You just sit here a spell. I need to get on some coffee, maybe put out silverware and the like.
As the small sliding hatch on the door closed, it occurred to me that heading in there was probably a trap of some kind. If Peach was as paranoid and as crooked as Atlas indicated, I had no assurances that he'd hold up his end of the deal. I pumped more even in my bloodstream and heard the door unlock. The door opened, but no one was there. You know, there's nothing like a nice, safe invitation to where you want to go. And this was exactly that. Nothing like a nice, safe invitation. I walked in, seeing a body to the left, and something encased in ice. Hearing Peach's voice shocked me into full alertness. Or maybe it was walking into a giant freezer.
Nobody comes into my swampy carrying the heat. Put your weapons in the pneumo, and I'll let you in.
Great. Outnumbered and unarmed. But at least he can't make me give up my plasmids. I checked my other gear to see what my options were. Plenty of Eve, containers of Adam from the Little Sisters, a couple of those auto-hack tools, and out of all the plasmids made available to me,
I only had Electrobolt. I was starting to wonder if maybe madness and deformation was better than death after all when I realized I did have an ace in the hole. All I needed was some dumb luck. I walked in further, finding it getting darker and darker. I slowed down my pace, letting my eyes adjust. A gate slid shut behind me and I froze, looking around in the dark. I made out a camera to the right, a vending machine in front, and a health station on the left. I couldn't make out more than that. There was a wide support pillar in the middle of the room. I did see something else promising, though. Pools of water, covered with a thin sheet of ice based on the cracks. Nobody moving, but several doors leading to other freezers. If I were setting up an ambush, that's where I'd hide. Once my eyes had fully adjusted, I fingered the two hack tools, then sprinted towards the camera. As I started hacking it, I heard Peach calling out from somewhere, "I bet when your boss waggled out of hell, he done told the devil he'd be right back. And the devil said, 'Sure thing, Mr. Fontaine, I'll hold you a spot.'" I finished the hack and ran around to the other side, starting on the health station. Peach wasn't finished, though. "Ryan promised us Fontaine was dust, and here you are doing his dirty... I guess that makes Ryan a bum, and you..." Damn it. He's running out of talk, which meant he and his pals were working up the courage to clean my clock. Probably armed and sporting plasmids. Trying not to panic was a physical effort at this point. "Ryan, he was ours!" Peach shrieked, and I heard something open behind me. Which was odd, since I had my back against what I thought was a solid wall. I spun around and found myself face to barrel with a machine gun turret. I have no idea how I managed to get out of the way in time. I felt the heat of the first barrage pass by me, and I heard yelling and an alarm. Some of Peachy's boys and girls had clearly gotten the attention of the security camera. As the security bot swooped in, I moved to the turret, shocking it, and then hacking it. Then I dove behind a metal partition and waited for the noise to stop. As I lay there, curled up to keep from being seen, I heard the health station being used, poison gas issuing forth and taking out the user. Explosions and gunfire split the air. It seemed like a lifetime before the noise died away. I opened my eyes and looked up. The hack turret was disabled. I peeked up to see 7 bodies scattered all over the room. I thought I was alone for a few blessed, cold moments until I heard Peach Wilkins' voice. He was spitting up blood, but he was still on his feet, carrying around a box of explosives. "Come on out, you turncoat. Doesn't matter what kind of plasmids you got. I'm gonna blast you to kingdom come." I was nearly defenseless, but I had one shot. I stood up, holding up my hands. "I don't like plasmids, actually," I said in a voice that I hope sounded pathetic enough not to take me out instantly. Peach grinned, walking towards me slowly. "Too bad you don't have plasmids, sonny. You might have actually lived through..." He stepped into the shallow pool of water between us. I had to be fast. If I was slow, he'd have time to throw one of those bombs at me and I'd be pate foie gras. I took a deep breath, trying to look deflated. Wouldn't take much. And then I threw every volt I had left at the pool of water he was standing in. Peach went rigid as I overloaded his nervous system. He'd gone for a grenade as soon as my hand came down, but he'd only had time to pull it out and pull the pin. He now had a death grip on the munition, holding it an inch or two away from the others in the box. And it occurred to me that standing that close to him might not be a good idea. I dove into one of the freezers and the door closed right behind me, right before the grenade in Peach's hand went off, acting as the fuse to set off all the other bombs in the box he was carrying. I thought the chamber was going to collapse, but it held. I got up, took a deep breath, and then opened the doors. The freezer was still intact, but Peach sure wasn't. He was little more than a dark smear on the floor. I walked over and looked down at him, or what was left of him, murmuring, "Never said I didn't have them, just said I didn't like them." As much as I hated myself for saying something so damn corny, it sure felt good saying it.
I went to the gate on the far side, which was a lot easier to open after the explosion, and collected my gear from the pneumo just a few steps down the stairs. It felt so damn surreal looking around at what happened. I had to tell myself that I wasn't a ghost, that I was still alive. Somehow. After upgrading my shotgun with another one of those power to the people stations, I found more freezers around me. Just when I thought I was doomed to spend my time fighting frostbite, I found that one of the freezers was warmer than the others. Must have been because of that big hole in the back of it. I went through it and got to the sub-dock, looking around at the bay. From what I could tell, the bathysphere was larger than the one I came in with. Clearly a personal model instead of a transit job, and from the look of it, the door was closed, but there were crates nearby, loading equipment. But more important than what I did see was what I didn't. If you have a wife and child, but you hide them in a loading dock for a while, there's going to be a few things around that makes it look lived in. There are no mattresses or blankets, no source of water except for the cold sea, no trash can because what woman wants to live someplace dirty? More importantly, there was not a single toy anywhere. Not even a makeshift one. I knew Atlas wasn't here yet, so I didn't have a whole lot of time. Going to the bathysphere, I opened it to see crates and boxes. I opened one of the boxes and found medical files. I opened another crate, which held specimen jars filled with Adam and others with live slugs in them. And surprise, surprise, there was barely room for one person, much less two and a half. I went to the scrambler he'd rigged in the bathysphere. It was ready to go. I wasn't sure how much time I had to make adjustments. 5 minutes later, I was outside the bathysphere looking at the sides when I heard the click of a revolver's hammer being pulled back. I turned around to look at him. The man calling himself Atlas. The one who'd been pulling my strings and leading me along. From his poster, I was expecting a younger man with all his hair. Instead, he was wearing a suit, looking very dapper and bald. You're not exactly how I pictured you. Back away from the bathysphere. Toss your guns at the pneumo over there. Slow. Don't try to be clever. Sorry, Atlas. I thought that was your main reason for picking me. I put the guns in one by one. So, how's the wife and kid? So you figure that part out. How long have you known? I didn't, not for sure. Until just now. His face grew cold. You been peeking where you shouldn't? Oh, I don't need to. This place doesn't exactly have a woman's touch, and there's no toys around. Name one child who picks up after himself, even under normal circumstances. He nodded. What else you figured out? Oh, come on, Atlas. You're not going to kill me. And what makes you say that? Because you're not Atlas. You're Frank Fontaine. And it would haunt you for the rest of your life if you threw away the one chance to let someone here in Rapture realize just how you outsmarted everyone. He looked at me for a long time, then smiled. You're smarter than you look. Before I give you the true dirt, you mind if I check something real quick? Not like I'm going anywhere. Fonte nodded, then spoke again, losing the Irish accent and picking up one born in Brooklyn. You sure got that right, boyo. He opened the bathysphere, checking out the scrambler, making sure the signal was still the same and that it was still functional. It should have been. I knew that if I deactivated it, he'd have killed me and just fixed it again. Right now, my survival depended upon him being sure he had the upper hand. He came out to find me sitting on one of the empty crates. So, tell me what you figured out, and I'll tell you everything after I've left. Hey, you're the one with the gun. That's right. So tell me how smart you are. Well, the first thing was the wife and child bit. While scavenging around, I found a flyer for a play written by Sander Cohen.
about a man with a romance with a ghost. Patrick and Mara? Bet you didn't expect those spider splicers to be theater buffs. Also, I started to suspect something after listening to the audio diaries left around, talking about how Frank Fontaine was killed. Next thing you know, Atlas is using Fontaine's resources powered by Adam. The poorhouses and the orphanages? Ready-made soil to grow yourself both Cadmus's army and provide enough little Adam factories to keep your army powerful and obedient. Timing was too convenient, and I don't believe in coincidences. I had to strike while the irons were hot. Timetable was a little hasty. And then there's the guy who died in my arms. God, how that must have burned. Setting that up must have taken a few years of planning, money, anticipating the right tool needed to give you this place. Then you gambled on him surviving a plane crash. You killed everyone else on that plane, all just to get him here. And then fate dealt you a bum hand. I bet you had something you could use to get him to dance to your tune. Not hard to imagine with all the genetics work done here. Changing bodies, changing minds. What was it, by the way? I'm curious. Fontaine frowned. It was, would you kindly? You can't imagine what it took to create him, prep him for what I wanted him to do, send him topside, and then get him here in a way that didn't show he'd been here to begin with. What I went through to get my ace in the hole. I didn't put all my eggs in one basket. It was always a chance, even a small one, that he wouldn't make it to the finish line. I lost the chance to control Rapture, but that doesn't mean I won't be able to leave without some party favors. I've already sent a message out. In a couple of weeks, I'll be picked up by a ship, and that'll take me and everything I have to France, where I can replicate everything at Rapture has to offer. Mechanical, genetic, even some of the artistic stuff. Sandra Cohen's work alone will set me up in business for a decade. And then you provide everything that Rapture is to the world. Well, certain parts of it. The power of the bomb ain't nothing compared to what's down here. Think of what governments will pay for a taste of plasmids. Soldiers that can flip over tanks. Spies and assassins that can go into areas unarmed, without guns or gadgets, but still cause more damage than an entire platoon of Marines. Flawless new faces for criminals within a day, and no scarring. Of course, you'll mention to them later that if they don't want their weapons to start melting on them, they'll need to pay more to the only supplier of Adam on the planet. You. Right in one. Oh, and you'll have no trouble creating on a grand scale, not once you reopen little sister orphanages in some country willing to turn a blind eye to turning little girls into Adam factories. Fontaine smiled at me. Listen, you're smart, you're tough, and you already need the Adam. Come with me. I brought enough food for a month or two with two people. I'd be willing to go a little hungry if it's something I could count on. If you come with me, you won't have to fight splices and big daddies for sips of Adam. You'll be able to have a tall glass of it with your breakfast every day and twice on Sundays. Of course, it's either that, or be stuck down here with Ryan's boys and girls hunting you like an animal for the rest of your life. And I don't see you lasting the week, even as smart as you are. So you're offering to take me up with you. That's the plan. Thanks, but I'd rather be eaten alive by rats. Fontaine's frown turned angry for a second, but the winning smile was back quickly. Suit yourself. More for me. Oh, don't worry. I'll think about you while I'm in my 100-room mansion, smoking Cuban cigars and banging the most beautiful women on the planet. And I'll think, that Jacobs guy, I thought he was so smart, right up to the point where he got stupid. I'll probably think that once, maybe twice a year.
Christmas and Easter. Oh, you're all heart. Hasn't it occurred to you yet that if you bring all this stuff topside, you're going to turn the world into the same kind of shit heap Rapture is now? You don't think there's going to be repercussions, consequences to this? Jacobs, it's going to be the same old shit heap the world was before. Only real difference is that I'm going to be sitting at the top. You walk to the bathysphere. Maybe I'll come back once I got my own submarine fleet. Take control of what's left of this place, you know. In case I need more slugs and more rubes. Maybe the Thinker will still be running and I'll take that with me too. The Thinker? I'll tell you all about it when I'm on my way up. He entered the bathysphere and spared me one last look, shaking his head and closing the door behind him. I waited until he submerged, then I pulled open the back of the service radio and started changing frequencies. Fast. After a few moments, I turned the radio back on to hear Fontaine's voice. Scrambler on, guidance system locked. Hey, boyo, you still there? No, I'm in Key West. Keep him talking. So, what's this about the Thinker? What is that? You don't think a place like Rapture would keep running if it was up to people to run it. Somebody came up with a machine to do their thinking for them. Manage all the menial mechanical stuff like regulating air, power, communications. It's probably the smartest machine in Rapture, and it's over in Minerva's den. Rapture Central Processing. It knows all, sees all. A sudden beeping noise came on. Well, what's going on over there? Ryan sent a bunch of torpedoes after me for all the good they'll do. All I have to do is just change direction and they'll just... I heard the sound of him grunting as he changed course, thanks to the gain pulled up on the service radio in the bathysphere. I could hear everything that was going on. What the... Scrambler ain't working. You checked it before you left. It was giving off a signal. Maybe there's something wrong with the signal strength? The strength, but... I practically heard it when it dawned on him. You changed the signal strength. Really? You sure someone as stupid as me could do that? I asked innocently. You son of a bitch. I heard the sound of the throttle being thrown forward. I can do this. I'll just have to outrun them. There was a wrenching mechanical noise. What the hell? Well, that would be the drop in manifold pressure. Happens when you overwork an engine when gasket bolts aren't properly tightened. And you're overloaded. More weight, more strain on the engine. At normal speed, it wouldn't have been much trouble. At full speed, however... I'm gonna kill you, you hear me? I'm gonna beat this. I'm gonna get out of this, and when I do, I'm gonna come back and I'm gonna roast you like a pig. I'm Frank fucking Fontaine. I outsmarted all of ya. Yeah? Think you can outsmart the 7 torpedoes riding your ass? Bastard! You fucking whoremonger! Transmission cut out. Somewhere out there, the biggest con artist in Rapture had just become Shark Chum. All his dreams of empire and power and wealth, all that pain and misery he'd caused other people, and all it added up to at the end was a cloud of red and scattered debris. I switched the service radio back to its original frequency, and apparently just in time.
Hello? Jacob, are you there?
I sat down and smiled. Hello, Songbird. Nice to hear your voice again.
Where are you?
Fontaine's private smuggling dock.
Where is Atlas?
Feeding the fish. I told her about what I found out about Atlas and Fontaine and what he told me and what his plans were.
Wait. His scrambler was working, so how did the torpedoes connect?
I turned down the strength of the signal. Since Fontaine was close to it, he only checked to see if it was giving out a signal, not if it would be strong enough to block out the other signal.
What other signal?
I was particularly proud of myself for this one. Just before I got to the bathysphere, I rewired the service radio I was carrying to change the frequency to the one you gave me, made it give off a signal strong enough to attract the torpedoes, and increase the gain on the microphone. When I got to the escape vehicle, I switched radios with the one in the bathysphere. Once he left, I jury-rigged the one that I had so he'd still think we were on the original frequency.
So when he talked to you, he was sending out a signal the torpedoes could track.
Fontaine always did love the sound of his own voice, no matter which one he was using. So the louder he got, the stronger the signal was. He literally talked himself to death. Loosening the manifold bolts was easy, nearly tripped over a toolbox coming in. I knew that he'd panic as soon as he saw his plans going south.
So, what are your plans now?
I haven't the foggiest. I took a long, deep breath. Ryan's got this paranoid delusion that I'm from the CIA or the KGB. I wish I could just talk to the guy, let him know I'm not the bad guy here. I'm not trying to bring down his city or bring other people here. I don't know anyone I hate enough to do that. A new voice came on the conversation.
The parasite always criticizes that which he cannot create himself.
Ryan, speak of the devil.
To be continued, in part 4.